This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the EPDP Small Meeting on Legal Committee Framework taking place on Wednesday, January 2nd, 2019 at 1400 UTC for 60 minutes. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no one, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for a recording purpose, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to Kurt Fritz. Please begin.
Morning, everyone, and welcome. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining the call as one of your first items in the new year. I'm very sitting around the agenda. I see on the right-hand side over here. So on the right-hand side of the page. So we had a couple of action items, and I need to add one to my own, but one is that we've asked Margie to draft some conflict of interest language for the team to review so we can send that on to ICANN, and two is that Thomas is going to do some drafting because he's not on the call. And then Barry's going to present a brief update on the procurement procedure. And I think as an addendum to that, Dan, thanks very much for joining the call. I had understood you wouldn't be able to be with us today, so thanks for doing what you had to do to be here. So Barry will provide a update on the procurement process. And then Dan, at the end of the last call, just before the holiday, you mentioned that I can need some stuff from us before they can actually start. So we had had a conversation about that, the support team over the break, and didn't quite get to agreement on what we needed to provide. So I'd like to ask you what you think we need to provide to ICANN besides the questions for the team there to start a procurement process for legal advice. So, Barry, if you could go ahead.
Thank you, Kurt. I'm pasting a link into the chat, which is to ICANN org's procurement process. Basically, it's a document that outlines the competitive bidding process for vendors. In general, I won't plan on going through the entire process, but more specifically for the needs of the legal committee here in terms of engagement with possible legal counsel or legal vendors. There's a more specified direct contracting selection process. And there are basically which outlines in certain circumstances where contracting directly with a vendor or service provider without the call for competitive bidding. There are certain types of situations, one of which is ours in terms of engaging certain law firms. While the entire procurement process is still adhered, what is slightly different here is that in terms of engagement with outside legal counsel, the process is led by the general counsel's office. And of course, at one point in time when an approval or selection of that vendor has been approved, obviously finance would get involved from a statement of work and purchase order perspective in those regards. But ultimately, this sub-process is led by the general counsel's office. Ultimately, in terms of turnaround time for engagement, it really depends on what this legal committee comes up with in terms of the questions or the requirements / qualifications of that request. The spectrum of turnaround time will depend mostly from either prior or existing arrangements. In some cases that could, and this is no direct commitment, but it could be as little as 1 or 2 weeks, and it really depends on which firm that this group might suggest. There are some other dependencies as to whether that firm had provided non-privileged advice in the past. But I think ultimately it still depends on the conflicts discussion that this group would like to iron out that has been discussed prior to the legal committee being formed and even discussed as early as our last call. I think this group still has some work to do there. And, of course, the other end of the spectrum, if there has been no prior engagement with that particular law firm, that could be substantially longer in terms of having to negotiate the terms of the engagement fees and if there's any unique arrangements. And, again, probably the biggest dependency there is this aspect of conflicts of interest, which hopefully Thomas will provide some information and certainly lessons learned from that. So if there are any other more specific questions, I'm happy to try to help flush that out in general, but that's kind of encapsulates the procurement process. Thank you.
Okay, thanks very much. So, Dan, I know you gave a brief description at the last meeting, but that seems like ages ago. So what do we need as a team to provide to ICANN to get the procurement process started?
Thanks, Kurt, and thanks, Barry. I think Barry is probably the expert on the committee that's been set up, and I forget the acronym for it, the team that's involved with the budget and the managing the process. So I'm going to stay out of that process, but just to me, it seems like we were kind of stuck at the starting gate, which was we need you and the team to come up with a request, basically, with just some basic parameters. Like, I think we were stuck before on the fundamental question of, do we want a brand new firm that's brand new to ICANN and this space, or is it okay to use a firm that ICANN has previously used and already might have an arrangement with to provide public advice on this? Because, we talked about a few examples of firms we've used that have already given public advice on registration data. And I think the team was discussing that and hadn't settled on it in the last call, if I recall correctly, but some people wanted a brand new, fresh, non-conflicted voice, and some people were okay with going back to one of the firms that we already had on a relationship with. But I think the general outlines of the request and, the requirements that the team has in mind. And then we'll take that back and then work that through the, once the team has settled on what the team wants, then we'll take that back through the process that Barry can talk more about. And, just working with, John Jeffrey and others on the team to finalize the actual procurement and, retention of the firm. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Thomas had written us some text just before the break that outlines some parameters. So this is for a brief team discussion, but Thomas's email that essentially outlined three points that we want to and he sent it not to the whole team. But he sent us these things, and Thomas, I hope you don't mind sharing. It was good. This is Thomas's first point, this was his second, which might cover. Did you? Okay. Well, here's for everybody's review. Here's the second point, and then here's the final point. So I think, for us, we want to, the idea that we're using a team that ICANN's used before, and in fact, a way that provides advice that's consistent with advice in the past is a very good thought. And then I think the direction would be not whether it's a new firm or not, but just to avoid conflicts of interest. So I think those are the kind of parameters that we could flesh out that we could add to what was in our original scope of work that Stephanie had put together for us. But, you know, I think the direction would just be to avoid conflicts that would avoid that in order to avoid conflict, you know, avoid conflicts, period. So unless somebody else on the team wants to opine on that, I don't think we want to give direction, if I can, on one way or another as to whether we want to hire a new firm or existing firm, just that we want to be efficient, meaning make the procurement fast and have the firm hit the ground running because they have the right level of expertise. And two, that you know, we want to avoid conflicts, and then I can sort of decide that. Does anybody have any opinions on that? Everybody sort of agree with that approach, or do we want to give direction to ICANN to avoid firms that we've used in the past? Hi, Emily. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you and to everybody on the call. I think it's I'd prefer to take a pragmatic approach and to, so long as, you know, everybody involved is adhering to best practice in avoiding conflict, then I think to have a hard and fast rule to say ICANN should avoid firms that it has previously used is a bit too severe. However, I'm also conscious that others might have, you know, strong opinions based on their experience of working with external firms on other items. So I'll obviously yield to them, but that's just my 2 cents worth. Okay.
Thanks, Emily. Hi, Margie.
Hi, it's Margie. That's a good question. I hadn't really thought about the law firms. I do recall there was even statements from ICANN Legal that they objected to certain things from the Hamilton memos. So if ICANN were to go back to Hamilton for this, I think it might be problematic. I don't recall them being that strong in the data protection area as other firms, but I'm just expressing an observation and trying to remember back to the reaction when the Hamilton memos were published.
I think if the disagreement rose to the level that the disagreement ICANN had with the inclusion in the memo rose to the level where ICANN didn't want to procure their services, they might be excluded in some way without us having to do that inquiry. And if the amount of disagreement is not that great, then ICANN would be happy to agree with them. But if anybody has an answer to Margie's question, that'd be great. Hi, Diane. How are you?
Great, Kurt. How are you? Happy New Year. I think that it's inevitable that there will be a perception of potential conflict if we use a firm that's been used before on exact or related issues. So I think that it could be a firm that has been used before, if in fact it's been on issues that are different enough and that they haven't opined in one extreme version or another. But ultimately, I think that it would be best, be optimal to use a new firm. So time has to permit. That's the issue. And so the procurement process then, if there could be some kind of assurance that the procurement process could be on the fast track. So I think that it will depend on what firms step up, what firms people put forth, and then if they are firms that are new, if the procurement process could be set up, and if not, firms that are existing, just make sure that there's not direct conflict on issues.
Thanks, Dan. Thomas, go ahead, please. Welcome to the call.
Thanks, and Happy New Year, everyone. I think the crucial issue is that we work with a firm whose advice will not be encumbered with historical disagreements. So, as I wrote in the chat, I think it is important to get a list of firms that I can might suggest. And with that, I think we should also get a list of items that these firms have advised ICANN on. Almost every legal opinion that we've seen so far has been criticized by some part of the community. But I think that some advice that was issued was more related to our work than other. So I think it would be helpful to get those two items for our group to be able to make a proposal to the plenary, namely the list of firms, list of things that they've been working on, so that we can assess the level of potential conflict of interest or impartiality. Also, I think it would be good to get suggestions for other firms that have not previously worked with ICANN. So when I originally suggested that we would work with ICANN and use the same outside counsel, the idea was that we would get somebody independent who has not previously worked with either party to ensure that there are no historical issues that might deprive the work results or, you know, their objectivity. I'm happy with both existing firms as well as new firms, as long as we make sure that we preserve credibility of whatever advice they might give to us.
Thanks, Thomas. I really like this, the clause you used right at the outset, you know, firms that are unencumbered with existing disputes or something like that. So, I think that, I have 2 points to make. One is, you know, I don't think the process, the procurement process will be so iterative that, ICANN will provide a list of firms and, we'll pick the one or more from them that we find acceptable. I think the procurement process is more or less an ICANN's lap. So I think maybe a way to proceed on this is to have, maybe the support staff could give us that, you know, I can think of two firms that have, provided input in the past. And then, but maybe there's a couple others with, links to work that they've done. So to the extent we want to opine that, one firm's work seem as qualified or good enough for us would be a way to proceed. So I think one was LGR, right, and the other was Hamilton. So maybe the best way to proceed is that, Margie, I don't know that, yeah, I think everyone's free to suggest firms. Margie, to the extent you expand on the conflict language, you know, using Thomas's clause in there would be good. And for staff, to the extent we want to investigate or read the opinions of firms where we haven't yet, we can look into the work of certain firms to see if their work seems competent and appropriate for us. So let's just proceed that way with those two things. So we're still, you know, Margie, Phil signed up in the chat to providing language on conflicts, so we'll provide that and then provide that language to ICANN with a signal to go ahead with the procurement with the parameters that we've outlined here in our verbal discussion. And then if Steph could give us some links to work that's been done, if we haven't read that, that would so that we can make recommendations if we want, that would be good too. Margie, please go ahead.
Sure, thank you. And to kind of elaborate on what Thomas said, unencumbered by prior advice, I guess the question I wanted to pose to this group is it just advice to ICANN or is it advice to other, say, contracted parties on the particular issue of data privacy? Because I think that that will also impact where their advice leads. Because obviously a firm isn't going to, in that scenario, give a contradictory advice to what they've already given a contracted party. So that's my question, I guess, to this group is whether that makes sense to make that distinction. So we're not just talking about advice to ICANN, but we're talking about advice also to a contracted party with regard to that issue.
Right, or any of the parties sitting at the table to this discussion, if and they provided legal advice to any of the parties, and I think that the way it generally works is that the if we have the appropriate conflict language in our procurement, that those firms would conflict themselves out. So I think that's a good point. Yeah, so, Marika, that's a great idea if we could put that information with Hamilton and the USGR. And Bird. Okay, so that'd be good. And, we want to get that procurement process rolling. So, we'll get something to, Barry in. And Dan, the first part of this week's over, but in the next couple of days, so that could be started. And in the meantime, in parallel, we'll look on questions for the firm. So I think the next part of the agenda is to focus on those. So this is the language, I think, what's in the bottom of the agenda and might be putting, if we could put these, the language up in the, where it says nothing's being shared in the central panel so it's easier to read, that'd be great. But there were three questions in the, initial report and, my vision of these where I had taken a whack at rewording them some time ago. would be that the questions would take the form of, you know, here's some background information that you need to know with regard to this question. Here's the existing advice we either got from the Data Privacy Board or a legal memo we received or elsewhere, you know, what's in the GDPR or supporting or documentation that we've gotten. So that sort of language. And then the third would be the question itself. So, you know, sort of like a mini legal brief. Here's the background. Here's the legal standard as we understand it. And here's the question. And that would seem to me to be a steady format for us asking the question. Does that make sense to everyone? I guess so. So, with that, I don't know if how we want to go through these questions. I'll note that Christina just sent an email, but even though she's not attending, she's working, so I haven't even looked at it yet. So could you put up on staff, could you put up, let's go to question two. We've got Margie on the call from that group and Christina's input here. So maybe we could have a substantive discussion about that. So if you could paste what's black in Christina's email into the notes that you have typed here, maybe we can take a whack at these and see how far we can get today. So so here's my question to the group, and we'll see if we can get a discussion started here. So for me, to give a to provide a legal firm with the right amount of information, I think we'd need to provide some background information. One might be, do we need to describe the registration process? And then two is, what are circumstances in the labeling of different who is information as natural and legal? What are the different types of information that are collected? So that's one. And then two would be, the input we got from the Data Protection Board regarding this information. So in their responses to ICANN, they described the legal versus natural distinction and the some requirements around that. So for me, I'd flesh out this question some more and provide some additional background information, and then some of the information we got from the EDPB that provides us some background. So can anybody, does anybody want to on the fly comment on Christina's amendment to the question? Thanks very much, Margie.
Sure. And I'm just now looking at this for the first time. This is Margie.
You and us both.
Yeah, I think it's clarifies the question, so I think there's a lot to work with here. I guess that's the question for this group. Are we going to ask this legal analysis for each of these layers, the registrar, reseller, registry operator, and back-end service provider? Because I think what Christina raises will probably come up in other questions as well. I didn't know we were going to be that specific. It seems as though some of these have contracts with ICANN, some of them don't. Like a reseller, for example, doesn't.
More back-end service provider.
Yeah. So I'm just curious how the others react to this. But in general, I think her language makes the question a little more neutral, which I think is better. I'd probably clarify what we mean by educational materials, which I think was in the other language as well, because I think if you, in the beginning part of the sentence where it says, if a registrar permits a registrant at the time of domain name registration to self-identify as a natural or legal person, I think we'll probably want to insert in there, you know, after being informed of the consequences of that choice, because I think the point of, you know, informing the person when they make the selection, is what we get, we're getting at with respect to educational materials. You know, and then you continue with the sentence. So I think that would probably, make that her question a little more palatable.
Right, educational materials sort of inside speak for us, right? It's not a more precisely, it's a description to the registrant of the distinction between legal and natural persons. And so, understand that distinction when entering data. Go ahead, Diane. Thanks, Margie.
Well, Kurt, I think that, that's a really important point, and just to take it a little further, I think the issue is to describe the context, because it's not clear by the question alone. So if providing more detail or even an example of what the what it would look set up to look like, if a registrar allows registrants to self-identify in the context of a domain name application by checking a box identifying itself as either a natural or legal person, and then in paren something to the effect of the descriptive educational language below, and then we would describe if there was descriptive language that explains to the its individual filling out the form what it means to identify as a natural legal person for purposes of the application. So I think that there has to be more context and more descriptive language for the appropriate legal evaluation.
Thanks, Diane. I have a comment to that, but let's go through the, I think that's a good comment. Let's go through the queue. Thomas, please go ahead.
Two points. I think that we need to clarify, and I'm not a native speaker, so I don't have the exact words, but the question as it currently stands speaks of incorrectly self-identifying. It may actually be the case that somebody correctly identifies as a legal entity, but that the information of the legal entity is actually personal information, which is protected under GDPR. So I would rather frame it in a way that sort of says that, you know, who or what is the liability risk involved with the treatment of data based on the self-identification of the registered name holder, which may lead to the inadvertent publication of personal data, or something along those lines. That's one point. The other point is that we might want to consider, and I'm asking this as an open question, to ask the advisor to respond at two levels, because there are actually two levels at least that reflect the liability risk. One is, what can an aggrieved data subject do against the parties involved? And that may be all the parties listed by Christina, but it may also be ICANN itself, right? So what are the chances or the risks involved with the data subject raising claims against the parties involved? And then there's the additional question of, what is the risk for the parties involved that the data protection authority will sanction them should they constitute that there is a methodological issue with how the system is set up, right? So if you do a system based on self-identification, if at some point they say, well, that's not good enough, then you might face not only claims from data subjects, but even more from the authorities. And I guess that, you know, in financial terms, that might be the bigger risk because, you know, damages in Europe are usually very low and manageable. But the risk of sanctions would be the more dangerous for the parties involved. So I think I would appreciate an answer on these two levels so that that this group can actually do a proper risk assessment.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Thomas.
Well, Diane.
Yeah, I totally agree. And just to take Thomas's point a little further, to also provide the caveat in the methodological setup or the contractual setup. So if the different parties here have a solid contract that has written representation and warranties, which explains the limited liability context of which in providing the proper direction, instructions, and educational support in filling out the form is the risk to the different parties, you know, lessened and, you know, what is it proportionately for the risk to be properly evaluated? The legal counsel is going to need to know all the parameters of the contract and the methodology and just the technical setup, because any party who has a proper setup, the data protection board is going to be less likely to find, because they're going to see that they did their due diligence in trying to set up a system that's cohesive.
Right. Thanks, Sam. So instead of talking about this directly right away, I want to get back to my original question, and that because we talked a lot about in this last 5 minutes, we've talked quite a bit about, you know, some supplemental information is required, and that's why I get back to, you know, having our questions appear in a standardized form that says essentially, here's the background, here's the supplemental information. So, you know, one bit of that supplemental information would be that the group discussed providing what we call educational materials, but is really an advisement to the registrant about the distinction between a legal and natural person and that other information. You know, because the firm might or might not be one of the ICANN cognoscenti, right? They might not understand the relationship between registrars and resellers. And I think, you know, if resellers are in this question, that relationship needs to be clear, made clear in any case, where there's privity of contract and where there's not. So I'm sorry for saying this, but I'm reminded of when I was in, graduate school and, we were doing research. So we had these offices all together and, we'd have a 3 o'clock joke. So we'd all come out and tell the 3 o'clock joke. But before we told the joke, we'd all go around and give American slang lessons because not everybody in the room was American. So they wouldn't get the joke unless we told them the slang. So I'm thinking this is sort of the same thing, that our questions need to have the right amount of background information and then, you know, whatever the legal standard as we know it is, and then ask the question in fairly terse terms, like Thomas was asking about liability with regard to sanctions or likelihood of sanctions. The question in really simple terms. And I'd like, so my opinion is that all our questions should be written in sort of the same format. And that format would be, you know, here's the ICANN slang language. Here's what we discussed. Here's the legal standard as we know it. And then finally, here's the question. So I'd like to, and I can write this up after the meeting, but I'd like to get some feedback from you guys as to whether that's the right approach or not. And so when we talk about, you know, looking at these two versions of the questions and saying, you know, we need to augment that information, we kind of have, you know, pre-designed buckets into which to stick that information. So there comes a time where I believe I'm just not making any sense at all. So I'll let that go. So I think that what we could do, and I'm asking the support team to do this. So this question two, we either got volunteers or pre-assigned Lorene, Christina, and Margie to the question. What would be great would be to cut and paste the we don't have a transcription of this, huh? So I don't know if we can time mark the, anyway, I want to capture the discussion we just had, in some way for Lorene, Christina, and Margie. I guess we'll just take it out of the notes and cut and paste this section of the notes and maybe send it to Lorene, Christina, and Margie to help them, discuss this. So I think, you know, where, you know, given where we are in the call and the discussion, what we've had so far, I think what we want to do is just send these questions, back to these sub-teams, to work on. So is it possible, you know, one thing we didn't, well, maybe the team did, no, well, not quite, but to the extent that, time zones allow, do you guys on the call think you could collaborate with your teammates via email on the amendments to these questions in order to present some form of them to the group for the meeting next week? Yeah, so kind of what Tatiana just said. Hi, Tatiana, go ahead.
Thank you, Kurt. Happy New Year, everyone. I was going to say basically what I said on the chat, because before this call, I really wondered how we are going to work at the questions. They're just excerpts from the report, and I believe that each of them needs some substantial background. And in addition to this, for example, my stakeholder group representatives have some substantive problem with the question which is assigned to me. And I would like to discuss with my teammates to find some suitable solution and suitable legal language for all of us, because personally, my direction would be to say part of the question shouldn't be asked, and I understand that it should be, but in other words. So I thought that maybe in the next few days, or I don't know, a week, we just work in a small groups, communicate with each other, like how much background information we need, how much plain language we use, how much complex language we use, and whatever. So we will have something to discuss on the call, because I'm just now, you know, looking at the screen, seeing these amendments for the first time. So it's not really super helpful, although I appreciate all the comments I heard on this call. Thank you.
Right, and we all agree that we just saw this email from Christine that came in actually after the start of our call, so it wasn't really appropriate to have a discussion around it other than to understand the kinds of issues that would be raised as this would go. Is there any coordination that the support team or Rafika or I could provide to you guys as far as coordination help or guidance in how to proceed, or can you just start emails amongst yourselves? It's only three people to a team, so it's pretty straightforward. So unless the staff people on this call or you guys have some suggestions, I would just leave you to it. Yeah, I think you are too. Okay, so, and if I can be ambitious enough, I'll write up what my suggestion is to the form of the questions might be for you guys to take or leave, and maybe provide an example of how that might be laid out. Margie, go ahead, please.
I'm sure. This is Margie. Separate from the questions, is there a document that just describes the industry and the registration process, that sort of, gives the background, because I suspect that some of the firms may not be as familiar with it, and not to say that they don't know anything about it, but I think it'd be useful to at least have a background document that sets the context before the questions are asked. Is there a thought to developing something like that?
Yeah, so that would be the next step up from, what I was suggesting is background information for each question. Maybe there's background information. Maybe there's a description of the registration process or something like that that exists or can be written. I don't know if you guys on staff or Dan would know. I know there's a... There's a graphic that describes the life cycle of a domain, but I don't think that's quite what we need. But maybe there a document somewhere that describes the domain name registration process, that it would include the historical requirements about who is information. So can we undertake a brief, maybe we can undertake a brief research project to see if something like that's written. I'm sure it's been written 100 times before. It's a matter of finding it. So thanks for that, Margie. Okay, and I understand how you guys are, some of you are on break. I just got in from traveling yesterday myself. So I understand how it might be difficult to work. It'd be great if whatever is done be emailed to the email list that Barry typed into the chat. By Tuesday, so we could put it up Wednesday, and there'd be some time for a few hours anyway for the group to look at it. Earlier is always better than later. So to the extent you can have something done in the first half of next week, that'd be great. Yep, well, certainly. Just to the support team here, notes for these calls are circulated the same as usual calls. Is that correct? Yep. So, maybe Diane, it'd be great for you, in your example, to follow up with Tatiana and Thomas with an email that says exactly the same thing as you said in the chat. It's not caught. So with that, I'm going to let everybody go unless there's additional comments or questions. And go ahead, Emily.
Kurt, I just wondered whether this little group will be meeting up during our face-to-face time in Toronto later this month.
That's a really good question. Yeah, I think we can meet from like 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. or something like that. So,
oh, this is just so great.
Yeah. So that's a good suggestion. So let's give it some thought.
Just thought I'd put it in there while you're I'm sure you're working with staff to think about the agenda for that meeting that
yep.
might just be worthwhile to get us together even for an hour or two.
Yep.
And also just to say something it might have been missed in the chat, but as we get nearer to the time, I'm sure that external counsel, as well as having a sort of a primer on how the domain name system works and how the different participants, you know, who the different participants are and how they interact, there's probably a big bundle of background materials relating to this issue, because there's been so much generated just in the last year to 18 months, but you know, there could be a select, you know, a bundle of things like previous legal advice, which is very comprehensive, and I think to avoid repetition, although there'll be more reading in time, I'm sure that will help any external counsellor who comes to this. Thanks.
Yeah, and your comment just now and Margie's gives me pause to think that. You know, I think some familiarity with the domain name system and the domain name industry should be a prerequisite that somebody can't. I also remember Margie's comment about, you know, coming, or Thomas's comment about coming in unencumbered. So that's sort of a balancing, but you know, they'll have to hit the ground running to a certain extent.
If I may, Kurt, just to follow up on that thought, it's Emily again. I think, you know, I'm sure all of us have experience of instructing external counsel in the domain name industry. And one of the frustrations is to spend a lot of time explaining how some basic stuff works.
Yeah.
And that has to be balanced against, I think, very, very good points made by others on the call, but if there's a particular firm or individuals who have felt to have a particular line or be very strongly associated with one key stakeholder, then, you know, that all weighs in the balance.
Oh, that's right. That's right. All right. So, thanks very much for getting on the call. Well, it doesn't seem like we made much progress. We thought it was really important to, you know, reconvene after the break and get going. So that's why we decided to go ahead and have this call anyway. So thanks for your participation and donation and time. And so we'll talk to you guys in a week. And if there's anything I can do or the support team can do, to help facilitate a communication or create any documentation or anything like that for your smaller teams, that we'd be very happy to do that. So please email me or anyone on the support team list, and we'll get after that. So with that, I'll end the call, and thanks. Welcome everybody back, and I'll talk to you guys all tomorrow. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.